Paul Schwartz, Water Alliance, DC.
Have y'all ever talked about spirituality and the importance of water and spirituality and almost across all of the belief systems in the world? There was an exhibit at the American Visionary Arts Museum called Holy H2O, Water from the Elemental to the Spiritual, which addressed the outsider art, like Grandma Moses, that deals with this thematic. So I wonder if that's been part of the dialogue and discussion.
I can't say I can go that far, but I can say that one of the things that the federal agencies have been doing is they have this community of ecosystem services, and they've been inviting tribal members to come discuss how they view these different benefits and services and how they see them being incorporated into this process and decision making. And of course, they come at it from a different viewpoint. They've always cared about these things and thought about them, but they may describe them differently. So that's one way that's being integrated into the discussion.
Yeah, my question, I'm sorry.
In my undergraduate course, Sustaining Water, the students will study the role that water has played in other cultures over time. And one of the dominant themes is keys to sustainability are often in the past, with the way water was honored and blessed and taken care of in the past, and that we can approach modern challenges with these lessons from the past.
Yeah, my question's about the cost-benefit analysis. And first, actually, kind of a statement about cost-benefit analysis. My group in the past, we really haven't touched on it before. We focused on the environmental impacts, the impacts to the coral reefs, the fish, that sort of thing. We're learning now that it's been a big mistake. Good example is Port of Miami's just got finished. They impacted hundreds of acres down there. We knew they would ahead of time. We've seen these prop dredge projects before. Now they're about to do Port Everglades. The cost-benefit analysis is done. Is it possible to, if you have new evidence, to make them revisit these cost-benefit analysis in the wake of what's happened in Miami? A couple hundred acres of reef were impacted at about $4 million an acre for mitigation. That would greatly change the cost-benefit analysis for Port Everglades if we expect to see the same thing. They're using the same process. Maybe the lawyers in the room, I guess you have to sue to reinitiate that cost-benefit analysis? I mean, aren't they obligated to use best available information? How does that work?
Somebody else may be able to answer that question better than I can in terms of how the Corps does that and what the rules are.
I would just urge everybody in the room, we've overlooked them over the years, and many of the federal agencies aren't even allowed to evaluate the cost-benefit analysis. I do with people at National Marine Fisheries, and they know the mitigation was going to be more and more, but they're not even allowed to bring the cost-benefit analysis up in their review process.
Any other questions?
I have raised, I think, this with a couple of you already, but I did want to ask for the benefit of the folks in the room. One of the things that's come out of the new planning principles and guidelines for whenever the Corps, at least, is allowed to use it, and right now they can, is a pretty clear directive, as that kind of guidance goes, to evaluating both the benefits and costs on ecosystem services. So lost ecosystem services plus ecosystem benefits. And I'm just wondering how much focus there has been in the ecosystem services world of looking at the lost services versus the benefits or the value of the existing services. There's no way to quantify that.
I say that the conversation is definitely about both sides, about, you know, thinking about the impacts of different things and including the services when we look at that, as well as the benefits. I think, you know, a lot of the conversation is that we haven't included all the benefits, so often that's what's talked about, but it's definitely not the only thing being discussed. And I think, particularly when you think about those that are dealing with infrastructure or, so like the Bureau of Land Management, dealing with mining issues, so impact is a lot of what they think about. And I think the Army Corps, you know, they've started on ecological restoration projects, so at that point they're having more benefits than costs, is the way they view it, I think. But as they look at other business lines, that may change.
So bias? Or how do you deal with the fact that not all ecosystems are natural, of course? So is there a bias toward thinking that natural ecosystems provide more ecosystem services than an unnatural ecosystem, for example, reservoir versus water rivers? Because I have a bias toward natural ecosystems, and my comments are not to me, oh, be careful with grass wall because, you know,
yeah, so I think, you know, that's one of the questions about how you define this and how you constrain it. I think at this point, some people do have a bias about that, but generally, I think that's not, there isn't a bias one way or the other, but it does bring up some significant questions. So one of the people I work with always asks, well, so if we remove this dam and make the river more natural, we're going to be losing all these benefits and services that people are getting in recreation from that dam being there. And if we do a cost benefit, including those services, what if we lose? And I'm like, you could lose. And so it's definitely an issue that's going to have to be worked through as we move forward. I'll
say one thing on that too, which maybe also gets back to the religion question that, you know, some services are a lot easier to value than others, and I think there's increasing recognition too of the very hardest to value services. So the fact that we get, you know, spiritual benefits or enjoyment from a natural system, and it matters to us that a species is able to still exist, even if we never go see it, and that those types of things are real values that need to be included too. So I think,
yeah, and as though we get better at those, that'll help.
We'll take one more question in the interest of time. Otherwise, I know we could be here all day long talking about ecosystem services. Mitch, I saw your hand up.
Oh, yeah.
So this is actually maybe more of an observation than a question, but I'd certainly like your feedback on it. I noticed that both of the examples that you gave for identifying the ecosystem services were sort of human tinkering, at least I looked at it that way, so it was mechanical thinning practice. And on the other side, it was sports fishing, and in my mind, when I look at that from sort of the state that I'm coming from, that's stocked fishing, that's artificial lakes, that's maintaining hydropower dams, sort of running down the line of that. And it seems to me that when you start that valuation, the bias from the beginning is on the side of the things you can put big numbers against, which would be, you know, how can we affect this and how much money would it cost? And I think that we do tend to lose, or it's hard to value those other services. And so it just makes me nervous to talk about valuing ecosystem services because it seems so easy to lose, to walk down that line to let's keep it. So, for example, we have a situation where there is a core dam that is not being used for navigation. I mean, it can't be used. They can't get the barges up the river. The best thing for the system, the natural system, would be to take that dam down. I cannot overcome the other side's economic arguments about the potential for future navigation. You know, I I know a lot of that is data that I just don't have and go out and collect the value of what that free-flowing system would be. But, I mean, that's daunting when you're talking about having to connect that to the benefit to society. And so that's my observation.
Yeah, I would just note those examples are just things that the agencies are grappling with, so they're examples we use. And I don't think we were thinking of stock systems when we thought of recreational fishing, because you could do that in lots of kinds of systems. But I do think that that's a concern that a lot of people raise, is that the more difficult to value values are sometimes the things we care most about, and they're the things that have been undervalued and underappreciated that we're trying to bring in, and that's going to be a critical piece of making this work.
All right, so that's about all the time we have for this panel. I want to thank everyone for speaking.